conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes, so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andysgirls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andysgirls. Sign up today. I just came back from the salon, and for the record, I went with a sassy little bob and quiet luxury shade of blonde. Yes, that's literally what we're calling it, quiet luxury. Aside from trips to the salon, I don't actually blow out my hair. My hair is naturally wavy, and that's why I love Way. Way's new anti-frizz cream is a lightweight cream that provides immediate frizz control that lasts for up to 72 hours. I know that I have a limited amount of time with wet, wavy hair in which to get myself in order. And that is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It has notes of bergamot, Italian lemon, violet, and more. And it smells unbelievable. Truly, as someone who is a little bit sensitive to scents, I put this in my hair and I feel great. It also genuinely pairs well with my perfume, which I appreciate. I don't blow out my hair because after years of color processing and attempting to make it straight, I know it looks better and stays healthier when I avoid blow drying, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. I've used products, especially with wavy hair, where it feels heavy and looks kind of wet. And that's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream, because it enhances the natural waves in my hair. I still look like me, just a little elevated. And P.S., I am way obsessed with Way's other bestsellers. Their leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, my personal favorite. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com with promo code Andy. I may not believe in God, but I have faith in the Real Housewives.
Don't let my obsessive compulsive disorder fool you. I love mess.
I may not organize it, but I'm the life of the party.
Oh my God, what an array. I feel like it's a sign of what's about to come. First, I need to introduce two new guests to the people's couch, iconic Bravo podcasters in their own right. Please welcome Noor and Arti, the hosts of the Reality Is podcast, a podcast about our problematic love for reality TV. You could not be more perfect for Andy's girls. So welcome, ladies. Welcome to the world of AG.
Thank you for having us.
I mean, you're welcome and thank you for joining. So I have to say, this is an interesting episode. I was telling y'all before
we even kind of scheduled this, that the impetus to this episode started because of this DM thread that we are on with each other. And, you know, the AG schedule being what it is, I just felt like let's have a bonus episode of AG to talk and to really kind of formalize what have been personal conversations that we have been having, us and the dog that we can hear barking. I do believe that that is, in fact, Danielle Staub, if I can say, just interested in joining the conversation. And I would like to say, you know, I got into a DM with somebody about something I posted on social the other day. It was very respectful. It was a good conversation. And at the end of it, she was like, you know, I don't remember the exact response, but she was like, I really appreciate you like listening and that we had common ground or whatever, that we were respectful. And I was like, listen, I am totally open to, yeah, of course, interested in respectful convo unless you tell me you're Teen Danielle and then we ride at dawn. So thank you so much.
I'm so sorry. I have to leave.
Can you imagine? I'd be like, all right, shut it down. Record 4-minute episode of this wonderful conversation and moment. But first off, I just wanted to welcome you guys to the Andy's Girls universe, which is a podcast and a conversation that I liken to a combo of C-SPAN and Ayanla Fix My Life, where it's all about talking about the minutiae of housewives specifically, but done through the lens of psychology and an understanding of the nuance and complications behind the behavior we see of these complicated women on TV. And I'm curious how that aligns with the reality is with the podcast that you host together.
Pretty much completely aligns with it, because our whole thing initially, Arthi and I started talking. First of all, I roped her into this. I was just like, listen, we need to do a podcast. And she was like, I don't know how to do a podcast. I was like, bitch, I know how to do a podcast.
Help me, people, save me.
And then essentially what we realized was that Arthi and I met through the Watch What Crappens Facebook group.
Oh, wow.
And we, you know, it's kind of like when you see another brown person in a room and you both lock eyes and then you're like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? And it's kind of like that experience that Arthi and I had as South Asian women, that we were both identifying the same problematic shit on Bravo, which we love, right? Yeah, we are all Andy's girls, and Andy Cohen is very problematic. And like, essentially, we decided that, you know, let's talk about our love for this stuff, but also with the lens that the real world that we live in, these things that we watch impact us in a certain way. So also on our podcast, we do some C-SPAN level talking, you know, we do talk about real life, because it's not just that we're only watching Bravo and talking about it. Sometimes you watch Bravo, you watch somebody on TV, and it just hits you the wrong way, because real life stuff is happening that also impacts your view of what you're consuming on TV, right? So like, if we have something on our mind and it's something going on politically or whatever, we talk about it. And sometimes there's so many parallels that you find on TV in relationships that do impact you in the real world. So that's pretty much like our whole thing also, is we're viewing this from the lens of our experience, but not just our experience because we're just, you know, South Asian women, because we're South Asian women that are constantly growing and changing, and the world is changing around us as well.
Right. So the only thing, I agree with everything Noor said. The only thing that I would add is that we're not C-SPAN. We're more like CNN International. And like Christian more poor, bringing you all the world conflicts and the world issues. But that's, so it's also, I sort of laughingly call it a modern anthropology class, where you are studying people, you're studying cultures, and you're studying how people interact with each other and go through life, and you are identify with some of it. You identify with some of the problematic stuff that you see. You identify with, you know, it may be problematic, but you see a little bit of yourself in it sometimes, and you're like, oh, shit, I shouldn't have said that, or that could be me. And at the same time, you're also you also feel like somebody needs to speak up when you see something of that sort, because maybe the audience, and predominantly the predominant audience, Bravo audience, doesn't quite get it. But as we get more representation on Bravo, it felt necessary to bring, add our voices to the podcast sphere to sort of not necessarily translate what's going on, but to sort of give a context and give a sort of a place to hang our hats and say, okay, this is where we belong as well. And this is what our experience has been. Noor pretty much was born here and grew up here. Right? Oh, Noor came here early. No, it's very early in her age.
We
like
just
6 years old.
Sarah, I need to break it to you. We just met Arthi and I for the first time right now. 10 minutes.
Sorry.
Oh my God, what a big day.
No, what I mean is Noor grew up here and I didn't. So I grew up back in India and I came here as an adult. So my experience is slightly different from hers as having lived and, you know, grown up here, went to school here. That's slightly different. So we also sort of bring that aspect to how we see, we watch Bravo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who would you say, for both of you to answer this, are your spiritual housewives in the sense of not necessarily your favorite housewife, which is often a different response, but the person that you connect with, problematic or otherwise, someone who you either see yourself in or learn from in the ways that they are maybe opposite to you, but you feel a spiritual connection to them anyway? Do you both have a pick?
Oh, okay. Unfortunately, she is also problematic and she is also my favorite. And she's also somebody that I really, truly see myself with. It's Lisa Rinna.
Oh my God. For some reason, I thought you were going to say somebody totally different. When you said like problematic, I was like thinking of a total different respect your villains vibe. But actually, Lisa Rinna, compared to many people, is a little bit of a villain herself. How so? What can you tell me a little bit more?
Yeah, it's because, you know, Lisa Rinna, she loves mess. And as I said in my tagline, I do too. But, you know, she has this thing about it. We just talked about it in the premiere because she does this apology to Garcelle, right? And immediately she's like, we can say cunt. Can we say cunt?
Oh, my God. Every day. How else would someone leave me an iTunes review instead of using – just kidding. Just kidding, guys. Just kidding.
So, she's the fact that she's like saying this apology to Garcelle and she's really trying hard. And at the end, she's just is like, I'm a cunt, right? It's this moment that she has where – and they also cut to her apology to Dorit like a couple of seasons prior where she's like, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, I know. I messed up. I'm sorry. Like she does these things, the scene where, you know, they pushed her – they like had her in the corner and were like, did you say that Kim Richards is near death? And she was like, oh, I don't know. Did I say that? But like you knew at that moment. Lisa Rinna knew she said that, but she was like, fuck, I don't know what to do. So I have found myself many a times, maybe not recently, because I just have the friends that I have and I don't really make new friends anymore because I'm an adult and I don't need to do that anymore. But I've had times in like college or like high school where you're like so friendly with everyone. You want to like everyone. So then you like talk shit with the wrong people. And then they like eventually gets to your other friends. And then they're like, did you say that? And you're like, I don't know. Did I say that? And it's like, there's no doubt in my mind that I did say that, but I don't know how to deal with the situation right now. So that is like, that's very much because Lisa, that's me. Because also Lisa Rinna is like, I mean, not last season. Last season, she was crazy. Okay. Did not love that. That was horrible. But Lisa Rinna, for the most part, I think is a, I think she's harmless in a lot of ways. She's just messy. I don't want to say she means well. Maybe I just think she means well because I see myself in her.
How much of her apology to Garcelle do you believe?
0%.
Yeah. Like none. She just doesn't want to get dragged. Like she's cleaning up her mess because she doesn't want to get dragged. Like that's all it is. It's like she knows this is coming her way.
Right. I mean, she knew, and Garcelle knows that. Lisa Rinna knows that. Lisa Rinna knows that Garcelle knows as well. She's like, okay, call me a few names, and I'll call it myself, and then let's move on, because we need to get this paycheck. She's hustling. Lisa Rinna is hustling, and she's like, okay, I need to remain in the middle, so I don't know how the rest of the season's going to go. And Lisa doesn't want to pick one side right away. She always wants, she's like Reza a little bit. She wants to come in. She wants to be sort of act as the mediator and be in the middle and then pick her side as the season goes along. So she has a storyline. So that's what she's trying to do is, hey, I just want to keep in touch with you because I already kicked out Denise and, you know, and now I want two other people because she knows that she cannot kiss Sutton's ass. So she's trying it with Garcelle.
What was interesting about the premiere was, you know, there was a lot of frustration last season by from viewers who felt like there was no real counter being expressed. And that's not necessarily interesting from a narrative perspective when it's like Denise, who doesn't really want to, who does not even does not really, but does not want to participate in the dynamic being presented to her, and kind of everybody else who has taken on the idea of like, if you don't mention it all on camera, it's a character flaw.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me this season, watching the premiere, and we're only one episode in, is the idea that we're getting a counter from the start. So what I thought was going to be like kind of not sneaky editing, but like a wink and a nod in a really kind of like perverse way with the Erica Jane stuff of showing her money and showing her glam and knowing that there's a counter in real life, was that Garcelle was very actively countering Lisa Rinna, and the editors were showing it in the real-time experience of watching the episode, where Rinna's saying something and I'm thinking to myself, she is so full of shit. She's a great housewife. I don't believe a single thing. And I'm thinking like, note to self, remember to say that at a later point. And then Garcelle fucking says it 2 seconds later. I'm like, great, you're doing the job for me. This is fantastic. I feel like I'm getting the perspective that I need, not just because I agree with it, but because it's something different than what the person is playing out on screen, which I think is really important.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think, but also I think it's editing. It's stuff that would have landed on the editing floor in the past years. They're leaving that in because they realize that if they didn't do that, because the audience perspective has been so different from what the editor's perspective has been, producers and editors' perspective has been in the past year, in the last couple of years especially. So they are leaving it on the floor. They used to leave all this stuff on the floor, but now they're including it because they see that that is going to draw the audience back to Beverly Hills.
Absolutely. What do you mean by leaving stuff on the floor? You mean leaving the count? They wouldn't.
The counter.
Don't
believe
that they would have.
Yeah, they would. They would support. Yeah, they were. And in the last season, especially, it seems so one sided. Mm-hmm. It seems so. You know, Teddy, and it seems so, you know, Kyle and Teddy and all of their viewpoints versus the viewpoints of what Denise might have or Garcelle might have. They did not bring that strongly. And when was the last time we heard Tom Girardi being mentioned this many times in one episode? Never. We saw a little bit of Erica's stuff, but we didn't see all of her jewelry and a lot about Tom and about her 14 rooms filled with, you know, clothes or whatever, right?
There's Danielle Staub again.
I know, Danielle.
I'm sorry. Oh, that's terrible. He's the third podcaster in our.
See, she heard about Caroline Manso. She heard about what's going on this weekend. She was like, I really need to participate in that conversation. Yeah.
When was the last time they showed Tom Girardi and all of, you know, when was the last time we heard Tom Girardi's name that many times in one episode? Or Erica's. You know, we saw a little bit of her clothes and all that glam, but not as much as she's showing this time with the real jewelry and everybody commenting on it and everybody talking about all the stuff that she has. It's just been a lot of that in that stuff, which might have been on the floor before, and now they're including it because it's part of the, it's going to be part of the storyline.
And you know, it's. interesting. There's the idea of leaving stuff on the cutting room floor and getting the feedback or almost kind of like pushback from the audience. There is also the idea that it is no longer Garcelle's first season and that she was also witness to a complicated dynamic that she certainly didn't agree with when it came to the us versus essentially everyone else that was playing out. And in many ways, it's a different thing to join the show mm-hmm. and experience the show your first season and then settle down for what might be a pretty bumpy ride.
Yeah.
But an opportunity where you're like, okay, I have a sense of what's going on. I have a sense of these dynamics. It's very different to watch it versus be a part of it, especially in a franchise that's so specific, which I think Beverly Hills is, where they're always at like a low to medium boil. They don't usually bubble over, but mm-hmm. there's something, you know, quasi passive aggressive going on. And I think that in many ways she has responded not just in defense of Denise because she feels like what happened last season was bullshit, but also because she has the benefit of knowing that a large part of the audience is mm-hmm. vocally on her side. Yeah. That is a very different kind of experience than to have, you know, your freshman season where you're just sort of kind of getting through, you know, to season two.
Yeah. And I think that's the same reason why Lisa Rinna is suddenly being so apologetic, because she does do shitty things, and you know she watches and reads every single thing that's about her in social media, and then she adjusts the following season. She's had a couple of really like chill laid back seasons where she wasn't really doing anything. I truly believe at some point she was like, I'm not going to be the only one that produces shit, so like you guys have to get somebody else to do it. So there were a couple of seasons where Lisa Rinna didn't really do a lot. And then last season, she came in way too hard. And then now she's like, okay, I need to take a step back. Like, I think out of everybody, the women in Beverly Hills adjust themselves the most every season based they produce on themselves. The viewers. Yeah, they definitely produce themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. I think Garcelle holding up for herself and being such a strong entity when it came to the reunion itself, Garcelle spoke up, and Garcelle was strong at the reunion, and I think that made Lisa rethink about how she needs to approach Garcelle.
Yes,
I think that's a great point. Yeah, and I think that there's a respect that needs to be given to someone who you know, did the job that Garcelle did her first season. I think she has and obviously it's paid off in a great way, in an enormous way, for someone who already has an incredibly successful career. So I think it's, you know, great to see that Rinna maybe takes a moment, even if she's doing so in a way to try to evade or avoid responsibility. I think that she does respect Garcelle as a colleague in this very specific job scope, which will hopefully help, you know, when it comes to their interactions later on. Arti, what is your choice for your spiritual housewife? Tell me, who are you thinking? Who are you feeling?
I think I am a Wendy Osefo wanting to be a Karen Huger.
Yes. Yes. That's perfect. Right? That's perfect.
I think that's me. I am a nerd. I have all of Wendy's issues.
She may or may not have multiple degrees.
Yes.
She may or may not.
How many degrees do you have?
A doctor. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I have.
Are you a doctor?
Huh?
What are you a doctor of? I heard the doctor, which was like a very.
Yeah, I'm a doctor.
New York. What kind of doctor are you?
Life, liberty, and pursuit of truth. Now, so it's. I am overly extra educated for no particular reason. It hasn't served me well. So I'm having a crisis. You can tell from the way that I'm doing a podcast about reality TV. That's my.
No, it requires. It requires a degree.
It's my midlife crisis right now. That's what I'm going through.
Tell me, this is such. I just have to say, this is such a uniquely woman-esque way to respond, where it's like, wow, that's so great that you've accomplished these things. And you're like, oh my God, it's the worst thing that's ever happened to me. I have several degrees. I should go fuck myself, which I was just telling these ladies before is one of my favorite phrases to say.
I just prefer not to go down that dark path. But this is, I was saying this in the last episode that we did, that the biggest accomplishment I've had is like, I feel like I got Hannah fired from somewhere else. No, I was like, you've had other accomplishments. I was like, no, yeah, but this one feels good.
Yeah. Wait, can you tell us? Are you able to? It's okay if you want to keep it private.
I don't want to tell. Yeah, but essentially.
But you have more than one degree. I like that I'm like absolutely respecting you by continuing to ask the questions after you are absolutely
established. It's fine. It's fine. You don't need to tell me. But go ahead and tell me one more time.
It's not relevant to this conversation.
So you have a degree. You're a doctor.
Huh?
And then other stuff. You have a doctor. You have some sort of doctorate.
And then I have other degrees. I have multiple other degrees. But
honestly, same. I haven't mentioned that to you guys before in the pod, but absolutely same. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm a doctor. And you know what, guys? I would give you that information, but I haven't thought of it yet. But by the end of this episode, I will have established the school that I went to for a master's degree and just being fabulous, honestly. It's continuing education. Thank
yeah,
so
no,
much.
Right. But, you know, I am an immigrant and I'm overly educated and I'm a little bit like Tiffany. I'm awkward. I'm trying to fit in. And so there's that too. But mostly my spirit animal is Karen Huger. I want to be like her. She is irreverent. She doesn't care what happens. Her wig is off. She doesn't care. She comes back and, you know, she calls, she has, you know, doesn't know how to operate her, you know, Instagram. She doesn't know how to operate her phone. She, you know, she's with Ray and her don't get along. And it's a whole thing. And she still fights for him. And she's just old school. And, you know, I like, and the fact that she comes for Giselle. I love the fact that she comes for Giselle. So I love everything about Karen Huger. I find her to be hilarious and I want to be her.
Yeah.
And what part of that is aspirational in the sense of wanting to have that kind of personality? What do you feel?
The delusional confidence that comes with it.
Like Ramona.
But Ramona has money to back that up, but Karen doesn't even have that, right? So Karen's delusional confidence is what I aspire for because I'm crippled by self-doubt.
Yeah, exactly.
And low confidence. So I want to be a Karen. I just am not. So she's my spirit animal. I want to be her.
So you aspire to be the grand dame. You
I
wanna
do.
Be the
I want to. I want to sit in the center of that whatever that seating was
at the birthday.
Yes,
forget?
I want to be
she
the
wants
center.
To be center chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's fascinating. Yeah. Are there other aspects of Dr. Wendy that you connect with aside from having multiple phenomenal degrees?
It's the immigrant experience. And we have talked about it. Yeah. Nora and I have talked about it because as an immigrant, our aspirations are not necessarily ours. They are our parents.
Yep.
And it's very, very hard to not achieve those for them.
Yeah.
Because it is such a life goal that they are working towards.
Yeah.
It is very hard for us to say no. And then we end up not living our own lives for a bit. And then to come out of that and then say, now it's my time and I want to live my life is kind of a hard thing to do.
Yeah,
and so that part definitely resonates for Wendy, you know, in terms of Wendy.
Yeah,
how was it? What was your experience like watching those episodes when Wendy was talking to her mom and really struggling with how do I, an adult woman with kids and success and the perfect husband? With a capital P, by the way, and asterisks around the words. We're not going to get in. We may touch on the trailer, but we do not participate in Eddie Acefo.
No.
Rumor mongering here because I do believe he's the perfect husband. It is complete hashtag fake news. But what is that experience like when you're watching those episodes play back, which are very emotional? Mm-hmm. You know, you're seeing Wendy mm-hmm. in a different light as you know, in many ways, in the most prominent way, as the child first, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. which is the role she felt she needed to focus on, you know, how to best play.
It's I finally feel like I'm beyond that now. Mm. But I did not 10 years ago, I would be in where Wendy is. And, you mm-hmm. know, I had a hard time breaking out of the mold of what my parents had mm-hmm. had said. This is your structure. This is where we need you to mm-hmm. aspire high, and we need you to achieve high. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't, then you were a disappointment mm-hmm. To them. Not that if now I think back and I'm thinking I could have disappointed them and they would have been fine. What were they going to do? But in that moment and in that time and space, it was a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. So I understand where she's coming from, and I'm it was cathartic to watch her do that. It was like, yeah, I've been there, done that, mm-hmm. been through it. And I wanted to reach in and say, Wendy, it's going to be fine. She'll adjust to the new you. And it's just hard to say the words that I don't want to be what you want me to be anymore. But, you know, the parents will adjust. But it's hard because mm-hmm. you don't know how they're going to react to that.
Yeah.
What do you think, Noor?
Yeah, I think that I had the same. I don't have multiple degrees. Okay, just very basic. Okay, got a degree in something that I don't have a job in right now. Like every other.
Her mother
person.
Still loves her.
No, what? Wow. No. Listen, we could get into my issues with my mother, but that's a separate. You have to do a whole other podcast on
that's
that.
That's the
Sarah.
After show, guys. Patreon.com/Andy's Girls, where we go to bitch about our moms.
No, you know, we saw the same thing with Tiffany, right? Where she yeah. gets to a mm-hmm. point where she's done all the things, she's checked off all the boxes, and she's still internally feeling miserable. And we're going to see these stories as we meet a lot of these immigrant women, because they're fucking fabulous women, right? They're incredible mm-hmm. women that most people will look at and go, I don't know why you're not happy with yourself, right? Like even mm-hmm. even earlier when you asked Arlie, like you said, like you – wait, what? Like, you're super educated? And she's like, oh, God, like, disgusting. I can't believe I'm, like, so educated, right? It's, like, the same thing of, like, I know that I did all of the things that I was supposed to do. Now, I don't have multiple degrees, but I got married pretty young. You know, I bought a house. I have a husband. I've got kids. I did all the things that Pakistani women are supposed to be doing, Pakistani American women are supposed to be doing. But all of us have, my friends and I, we all talk about this. You get to a point like in your 30s where you're like, wait, hold on. I've only been doing stuff for everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I've never, nobody mm-hmm. ever stopped to ask me, like, what do you actually want to do? Not like, is this something you want to do? But just more so, what do you want? And when mm-hmm. do you get to decide when you are living for yourself? Because we're conditioned to believe, and I think this is across the board for all women. Thanks a lot, patriarchy. But we're conditioned to believe that we should be doing things based on what society expects from us. And nobody at any point stops and tells women to do any introspection on whether or not this is something they even want, right? Like, we're kids. When you're a little girl, don't sit that way. Don't wear that dress. Don't stand that way, don't talk that way, don't laugh too hard. All those things are already ingrained into us, and we're constantly being told to be concerned with the way the world views us. So we're constantly doing things based on what we think the world wants from us, but not ever taught what do you actually to ever do any introspection mm-hmm. on what you actually mm-hmm. want to do. So like Tiffany and Wendy are going through this experience as really educated, really successful immigrant women who were told this is what you need to do in America, because also your parents did a fuck ton to get here, and you owe them, because look at how much they did for you to have this. And if you just throw it away by, you know, God forbid, like an immigrant parent has a child that's like, you know, like one of Luann's kids.
I know.
Just an artist.
God yeah. forbid they have an artist. Me, yeah. a child who went to school for fucking musical theater. God forbid. You know?
And yeah. so, like, for them, yeah. it's like, what? You're going to be an yeah. artist? Get yeah. out of here. Like, what do you mean by that? And it's, that's what we grew up with, and that's what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. And I actually hope that Bravo shows these stories and continues to show women like this. It's of course not the way that Tiffany was treated, but more of these stories are shown on TV because it's the experience of an immigrant woman in America.
Yeah.
The translation of it is also kind of interesting from like the patriarchal perspective, or just the perspective of a group of women who are trying to assert their power or privilege. And mm-hmm. oftentimes that comes from being like, I'm an alum and you're new, mm-hmm. so I need to show you how it's done, or critique you when I feel like you're not getting the job done as I would. And the idea that, like, Tiffany, a woman who has worked her ass off, who has her own money, who married into a very wealthy family, is showing the house that they created together. And the idea that Stephanie would say in a confessional, you know, it felt like a little braggy, it felt a little showy, whatever the language mm-hmm. was, where there's an additional translation that you have to make. Like, there is a joke, mm-hmm. which is based in fact, the idea that if one of my girlfriends or whomever says to me, like, oh my God, you look so great, I have to respond and be like, oh my God, I'm such a piece of shit. there's 8 things wrong. I can't own it. I can't agree. I just need to tell you, oh my God, I've never looked worse in my life, but you look great. And then there's an exchange. It's an exchange of us sharing the ways that we feel mm-hmm. terribly mm-hmm. about ourselves as a nice salutation. And there is an element of that, I think, in the generational divide between new freshman housewives and existing ones, mm-hmm. plus the layer of being a new housewife who is a woman of color on a show that is on a franchise that is predominantly not, plus the additional complication of what was going on politically in that dynamic specific to Dallas. There's a lot of additional translation and power assertion. It's like a little bit of a power struggle
right.
that happens. And, you know, we got to kind of see it play out on Dallas in a really kind of crazy, messy way.
The mm-hmm. only thing common between Tiffany and the rest of the women of Dallas really was the money and the zip code, right? Everything else about Tiffany was different. Her culture is different. She's educated, she has a job, a demanding job, and she, you know, she has little kids, and she is Asian, and she is like she's not of their culture and their their group. So everything about her was different. So Tiffany had to overcome a lot to fit in, or at least she felt she had to overcome a lot. And she did, because the women didn't make it easy for her, because they questioned mm-hmm. everything about her. Why do you have to work 5 days a week? And what if you have to go 2 days off? How is that a bigger problem? How is it a big problem? And what is your food and your house and your rules that you may have in your house? I mean, we were talking about it on our pod. We don't wear shoes in our house. We make mm-mm. whoever, if you came to our house, Sarah, you would have to take your shoes off at the door.
Even that's the how Manolos. That's I'm how sorry.
It is in our, even though my house is even though my house is disgusting and my dogs have been walking around with their paws dirty, when a human comes through, it is the respectful thing to do is, like, take your shoes off, because you have been to public bathrooms, okay? So you take your shoes off and leave it at the door. So that is essentially how an Asian home works.
Yeah.
But that's mm-hmm. my culture. It's not what you – when I go to other people's house, my instinct is to take my shoes off, and then somebody has to tell me, no, you can keep your shoes on. They have to let me know that.
I don't
that.
Know what to do with myself when I'm at somebody's house. And I
like,
get
don't you feel uncomfortable like walking on the carpet with your shoes?
I'm like, this is a bad idea. Like, you should just let me take my shoes off.
Please let me take my shoes off. This makes me very uncomfortable.
It is not something that I would never think to take off my shoes, except that I had a roommate who was like, who was a germaphobe and was like, we cannot have shoes in the.
Yeah.
So as a result, I now do it. And it's also like, I live in like a small shitty apartment in New York City. So of course, I'm going to take them off as like a form of my own self-care, is taking off shoes after walking several miles. But I've nannied for a bunch of well-known families in the city or whatever, and it's like the first thing that you do is the first thing you do is take off your shoes because they're thinking of the resale value of like, we don't want to fuck up the floors because we need to sell this shit for 10 mil in like any day. This marriage might not work out. I don't know.
Wow.
I live in a perfect six on Park Avenue, but who's to say anything?
I should use that. I should use that excuse for when people come over. I should be like, listen, I might have to sell my house one day because I might decide to leave my husband.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not, it isn't, I add a little bit of the color there where it's like, who knows what goes on? I do watch a lot of Bravo. Who knows what's happening in this relationship? But it is truly about the resale value.
If only, Sonia had made everybody take their shoes off, she could have sold that house, that townhouse.
Sonia. Oh, sweet Sonia.
Oh my God. Yeah. She could have saved money on floors and used it for basic heat and warm water.
Yeah. Not brown
ice. Pickles. Oh my God. Just a mess. A mess in a moment. I don't know that I've walked by. We both live on the Upper East Side. I am toward the water end and she's closer. She's actually not on Park, but she's like almost adjacent. I've never actually walked by her house before, even though I'm like 20 something blocks away from it. I should one day. I've lived here in the literal apartment I've been in for 10 years.
Knock on her door and ask for some ice. She'll let you in.
You know, I think Sarah, you should at least.
You might have to draw her a bath, but she'll let you in. She went to.
And I'm an avid anti-bather. I don't understand it. I don't get the water. I was watching an influencer talk about this earlier today. I was like, she's making a lot of great points. She is also not a bath person because it's like, I don't get how the water works. You sit in water. I don't understand it. I know people that love it, but you sit in water. That's not the second you get in. It's
here's
no longer
another.
In water,
here's another.
And then you just lounge. I don't understand.
Here's another secret about immigrants, especially from the equatorial part of the world. We don't take baths. We take showers. And
right.
So I know of folks from Africa. I know I have friends from Africa, and I know that I do that. Before we get into a bath, even if we do get into a bath,
you take a shower.
You take a shower first.
You clean yourself up before you get in.
Maybe that's what people do, and I was not taught that.
No, that's not something everybody does.
Oh, it's so smart, though.
That for my back hurts or my ankle hurts or whatever. I'll put some Epsom salt and sit in a bath for that purpose, but take a shower first.
Yeah, always. So we just got our bathrooms done last summer, and so I have this like really nice bathtub, and I was like, I'm going to do a soak. And I set up the whole bathtub, right? And then I looked at the water, and I was like, I've like been cleaning all day. Like I can't get in the water right now.
And then
so I take a shower.
In your own
and then
filth.
Just sit in my own filth. Like what? We're not.
It doesn't
why?
Make sense to me. I don't get it.
Yeah. So then you have to shower first before you get in.
All right, guys. This is a real educational podcast, and I hope that we're all learning a lot of valuable lessons about ourselves, about basic hygiene, about how to transition that into moments of self care. I mean, bubbles for everybody. It's a different kind of bubble than what New York.
Yeah, listen to the reality. Is we have more tips.
No,
I'm just learning so much. I'm learning so much today, and the number one is really how to take a bath.
You know who didn't take a bath? You know who didn't take a shower before they got into the bathtub?
No.
Ray Huger.
Wow.
You have to do that to me.
Yeah. Yoo-hoo. Don't forget.
But you know who did? Karen did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she took a bath. She put on makeup.
She took a shower. Yeah,
she did everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of the beloved Hugers, what were your thoughts on the trailer that came out yesterday?
She should be allowed to show her pubic hair if she wants to. That's it.
A woman's right to choose. I'm into it.
A woman of a certain age. I think, why not?
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm perplexed by the fact that this is called a teaser. I was like, that's a trailer. Like, what else are you going to release?
Why was it called a teaser?
Yeah. But just what blew me away was the teaser had more in it than the first episode of Beverly Hills did.
You felt that?
Yes. The teaser had so much more in it. And the teaser was so much more anticipated and well-received than the episode of Beverly Hills. It was like, everybody's excited for Potomac to come back.
Everyone is very excited for Potomac to come back. My counter for that would be there's an hour Patreon-exclusive episode that's up on the AG Patreon where I typically watch the trailers for upcoming seasons live and record my reaction to discuss it for the Patreon episode, which is what I did. I was a little confused as to the narrative structure of the trailer. I honestly watched it and was like, I have never felt so disconnected from a Potomac trailer before, which to me says nothing about the season to come. I'm sure it's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. You know, Potomac is like the critic's choice. Every content creator loves Potomac, unabashedly, myself included. But I didn't understand the structure of what I was watching. It felt like they were pulling from the Jersey, marriages are falling apart, slow-mo, slow reaction, and then this, like,
I give you that. It felt like a PowerPoint slide that Ray might have put together. Yes, it did feel that way. Like, it was a hodgepodge of things, but I was happy for every hodge and every pod. Like, everything that came through, I was like, yes, yes, yes. And Ray and Karen Gardening, I could watch that, just that, as a show forever. Mm-hmm. I could watch that on HGTV. Ray and Karen Gardening. I could watch the new housewife come and throw lettuce on Candace.
Oh, my God.
Like, look at this trailer has tossing salad. Like, it's
tossing salad. I mean, Jersey tossed cheese. Well, Potomac has salad.
Very upsetting to me when the cheese fell. Yeah. That was very dark.
Salad is fine.
Salad, who gives a shit? It's going to go in the garbage anyway. No one's going to eat it. Then it's going to rot in your fridge. You're going to throw it into the trash eventually. Yeah. It's fine. But the cheese, have some respect with the cheese. Right. I felt like the trailer was fine. I was really excited to see them. I think a lot of times I'm just really excited to see the ladies. I'm like, yay, I'm just so happy. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I really enjoyed was you could tell the simmering anger in Wendy Osefo pointing her finger at Giselle. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to fuck you up. And I was like, this is what I want. Like, and I actually hope that as a result, we get a Wendy and Karen team.
Yes.
Because you know what? That would be phenomenal.
Do you think that could happen? Do you think that because they really should unite together. Uh-huh. They have a shared enemy and their own odd.
Then they would be the perfect.
It feels like misconnection style friendship. You know, like where they're friends. Then they would be friends.
They would be my perfect spiritual, you know.
Yeah, it would be Arthi.
Yeah, it would be not. It would not be me, but it would be what I aspire to be.
Yeah, it would make sense. Yeah, it's like you both have the same enemy, and you should just combine forces. It's fine.
I don't know why it feels to me like it feels like the missing or misconnections on Craigslist. It really does feel like when you see that person, but you don't really know them and you leave them a note. It feels like that is the reality of what we hope for their friendship, that we hope they want to see each other again. They don't really know, they don't know each other in a way that feels like positive or open or like trusting. But I think that there could be potential if they put down some of the armor that, they use as their own, shield. Yeah. It could be interesting. Yeah. What were you going to say, Arty?
That was it. No, I'm okay.
Oh, that was it. Oh, just kidding. I mean, listen.
This is what you need to know about me. I love to interrupt.
Oh, hi.
It's a cultural thing.
It's a cultural thing. So, but if you put the mic in my face, I'm like, no,
I have nothing to say.
I'm a Jew and an Italian, so I can understand that perspective.
Yes, you can.
We like. I was talking actually to a friend the other day about this as I interrupt you to talk about the joy of interrupting, the spiritual guidance behind that, who was talking about how that's actually sometimes, in some cases, a symptom of anxiety, of the idea of either wanting that person to make sure that you are hearing them by making your voice heard or assuaging any kind of concerns you have in your head or making sure that your point comes across, which I totally could see as a very real possibility.
But in this situation, it's mostly because I don't want to forget. because I have something up in my head and I'm like, oh, I want to say that. And then I'll forget. So then it'll come. It'll come to me when I'm in bed and I'm like, shit, I should have said that. Mm. And that bothers me.
I hear you. when it comes to what could be called a potentially forgettable season, do you like that transition? Thank you so much. When we think about a little the Real Housewives of New York City having a tough start, one could say, what's your reaction to the armor and shields that we've seen by, you know, the OGs, spiritual OGs in the next generation in Leah and Ebony?
You know, I think I really like Ebony. There's something about the way that Leah is navigating her relationship with Ebony or even with the other women that is feeling irksome to me. And I think I was able to pinpoint it last week when we had this scene where Ebony has an issue with Ramona. She sits Ramona down. She gets it off her chest. Ramona may or may not have understood, but Ebony was like, this is bothering me, and all I need to do is do my job to tell this person what the issue is. Leah has a problem with Ramona. She sits Ramona down, and she's like demanding some sort of a reaction out of Ramona that Ramona picks up that she's looking for that. And Ramona's like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm not going to do it, because she's Ramona, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end, when everybody's like, look, we all know she's a liar. Like, we all know Ramona doesn't know what plasma is. Mm-hmm. So, like, the fact that she's not caught, like, admitting to it, or she's just being silent, like, you made your point, Leah. You can move on. She immediately goes, I don't know why I'm the asshole now. And it's like, well, then now you're making it about you, Leah. And that's the difference between the way Leah navigates this and the way Ebony navigates it. And in my mind, and this is just my opinion, in my mind, that is very indicative of a person who has been dealing with these kinds of issues their whole life versus a person that has just recently learned that they should be calling people out on problematic things, right? So Ebony, likely her whole life as a Black woman, has been dealing with women saying problematic things to her, and she's figured it out how to deal with it. Whereas Leah may have grown up hearing these things and didn't think twice about it, but has recently come to the realization that she should be speaking up about it and is like really wants to make a point. And so that's my issue with that relationship, because Leah is coming off self-righteous to me, and I don't love that. It's not a fun watch. Because look, Leah, we want Ebony to drag Ramona. That's fine. But Ebony's going to do it in like a really really swift way. Whereas Leah seems a little bit too, like she's trying too much. But in terms of like the old versus the new, I think one of the most fascinating things that I've heard is that Ebony is like home, like really, really good pals with Sonia Morgan, who is an OG, basically. And so you have this person who's like, Sonia, who could be best friends with Ramona, but also can be totally best friends with Ebony. And I think that that's a really fascinating relationship that I want to see play out, because Ramona's going to Ramona no matter what. Like, she's just, she is who she is. That's who she's going to be. But it's almost like it's a harder watch for me to see somebody try to drill information into Ramona's head than it is. It's easier for me to just watch Ramona flounder, which is really all we need to do.
So Sonia can be problematic in some ways, but at the same time, Sonia is very hearts on the sleeves kind of a person. She's very open. And I think people like that about her. She's not hiding anything. She's not saying one thing and meaning another thing. She's very upfront about it. And I think Ebony appreciates that. Whether it's problematic or not, Ebony appreciates that. And you know what, Sonia? If you told Sonia that whatever she was doing was problematic, Sonia would change. Sonia would, you know, listen and incorporate that. So I think that is something genuine about Sonia that all of us like. And I think Ebony sees that and likes that about her. On the Leah aspect, this is something, again, this is one of the things that I forgot to say in our podcast last week and was bothering me afterwards. But the other thing I was thinking about why Leah is going so hard was that, you know, this was around the time when everybody was coming down on Leah for being quote unquote woke and being performative and not really, really standing behind her words. And I'm wondering if that is pushing her to get her ounce of flesh. Every time she comes up with an issue, she's going to make sure that she is not just saying that and moving on, but she's going to make sure that she is right and proves that she is right. And about Ramona, about Sonia, about Heather, she's going to prove that she actually backs Ebony and she's going to fight for that, right? So I think that's where she's coming from, but she's going about it in a very, very misguided way, because we still don't believe that about her. We just find her to be annoying right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also a way that activism has been created and molded online, which ends up being a little bit of a I'm talking at you instead of having an interest in talking to or with you. And with Leah and that moment with Ramona, it felt a little bit of like Leah needs to hold her accountable with a capital A versus Ebony, who was trying to understand and then move on with and from the truth. You know what I'm saying? Ebony's like, she's giving you the answer. You're not listening, but you're looking for something else in addition. And she's not going to give you what you want. Like, there's an element of accountability that sometimes borders on humiliation of like, you deserve this because you've done wrong. So I need to publicly hold you accountable in a way where the reaction could be shame, but it's something that I feel that you deserve. And it's performative because it's happening for TV cameras and in that sense, not in the sense of like Leah's corporate, but just in the reality that this is an artificial environment because it's being shot for TV, just inherently. And there's that bubble there, and Ebony's navigating the idea of like, she's already giving you the answer. We need to stop and move on. Like, you're not, there's not going to be anything else that comes from this. She doesn't have the capacity to give you the language that it is that you need or are looking for, and she's not going to participate. So if you're looking for the truth, you've already received it. Let's keep it moving, which I thought was really powerful and impactful. And maybe something that is, you know, the privilege of maybe being a first season housewife, where you don't feel like you have to play the game and you can also call the game what it is.
You know,
I think that happens from someone like Ebony, who's very, who seems very connected to herself and her core in a fantastic way, and also has the joy of being able to say, like, this is kind of bullshit, and I'm the new one, and I can come in and say this, and I also know how the game is played. I think it's fantastic to see, because there's that friction of that, too, of Ebony being like, Leah, what are you doing? And Leah being like, what I thought my job was, you know? That's what I'm doing.
I think Ebony has been one of the most seamless entries into entrees into the Housewives franchise. She has been really seamless in the way she has sort of gotten along with everybody. She feels like she's always been there, right? She knows how to play the game. She knows
she really how does.
How quirky all these women are. She knows how to handle them. She knows when to step back. She knows when to speak up. And she knows how to speak up. To keep it respectful enough where everybody at this point still likes her. Everybody likes her, and they respect her for respecting them.
We know from the preview there's going to be something that happens, and she's going to reference her education, which I do believe that Ebony is very well educated, is a lawyer, has those degrees, and should be allowed to celebrate them. And there's this like weird awkward moment we saw in the trailer for the season where Luann's like, you can't tell me that I'm not like the most, I'm not educated, or I'm not the most educated person at the table. And it's like, okay, I don't know the context of that because we haven't seen the episode, but Ebony, you cannot take away from this woman's law degree and attempt to say that you have the same kind of education, which isn't to say that you're not intelligent. It isn't to say that you're not well informed. It just so happens that you may not have a graduate degree. You may not have a law degree. But, you know, it doesn't, sometimes people take that as a form of an attack, and it shouldn't be seen as that. It should just be seen as like, you made different choices. You went a different way. That doesn't take, that shouldn't take away from, it shouldn't make you feel protected of your own intellect because it's not a reflection of that.
I think that's what we're seeing a lot. I call those private experiences when somebody says, thing and you just automatically assume that they're attacking you or that they hate you, which, like, ladies, we go through it all the time. And, like, I feel like,
I mean, this week alone, you have texted me and said, that's your private experience, Arati. That's not really happening to you.
Hey, hey, keep our stuff, you know, in our closets.
With the degrees you're going to tell me about.
But, you know, I think it's this, what I like to call private experiences are when you think that everybody's mad at you, but nobody's really mad at you. You're just having a private moment, which is like 80% of housewives is that way. I feel like 60% of being a woman is that experience. And like, that's what we're also seeing a lot of on TV, especially in the context of Real Housewives of New York, where you see Ebony. I mean, as far as I understood the trailer, Ebony says, I'm the most educated person or something like that at this table, which is a fact. Something. Okay.
Right. It's not right.
It's a fact. Right. It doesn't mean that she thinks that you are dumb. It means that she has the most degrees. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's all that means. And sure, she may have definitely said it to be snarky or bitchy or whatever. But like at the same time, Luann's reaction to that being, you can't call me dumb. And it's like, well, she didn't call you dumb, you know? And that's just sometimes the reaction you get out of that. So
I also feel like sometimes our reactions to things are just like a reflection of what we're most afraid that people will think is true. Mm-hmm. So for Luann, she's hearing that as like, okay, I was a successful model, but maybe I was in spaces where people only thought of me as like the dumb, pretty one or whatever she was doing, or being in a position where she had great wealth and privilege as associated with this marriage to this man. And people were looking at her as an object of her husband and not as a person who was in full, who hopefully had capacity to be her own fully formed person. Or maybe she was working to reflect herself against this marriage to this man, or in conjunction with this marriage with this man, because it helped her see herself. It was in relation to this guy. You know, it might have been why she held on to Tom D'Agostino as long as she did, because she wanted the reflection to be of her in some sort of something, a happy marriage or relationship or somebody who was able to make it work. Oftentimes it's just that moment. We sometimes get triggered, and sometimes it's a trigger word. Sometimes it's triggering behavior. Sometimes it's just that triggering acknowledgement of like, oh, this is the deep, dark pain that I find myself accessing.
Yeah.
And that's tough. It can lead to tough times and tough experiences. And we see that sometimes in these really kind of hilarious scenes in these moments, but there's a lot of truth there, and it's raw and it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, projection is a hell of a drug.
It really is. I struggle with it a lot. I mean, it's something in my, no big deal, but not to brag, weekly appointments with both my therapist and psychiatrist. But it is something that I struggle with a lot. Yeah. I really am a very sensitive person at my core, and it's very difficult to try to separate who I am as a person from like the perfect, because I have chosen to do podcasting, and as the podcast has grown, I get a lot of pushback to things I say, which is sometimes framed around who people assume that I am or how I speak as I am on, you know, AG. And that has led to a lot of uncomfortable moments where I have had like genuine anxiety crises about something that happens as a reaction to something that I say on the podcast, or an email that I get, or some like really nasty DM. And it's really hard to separate the reality of what could be a very small moment from how it lands, you know, from like the projection of, oh, this person is tapping into something that I actually kind of feel about myself. Mm-hmm. And I hope that it's not because they can see something real. I hope it's just because it's a little bit of bullshit wrapped in a bow, you know? And it's tough.
Yeah. And I think that's also how we pick sides when housewives fight. It's who do we, like, Arati brings up always a good point, which is, you don't always necessarily side with the person that you're most like. Oftentimes you're siding with the person, you're siding against the person who you're most like. Because it's almost like, you know, you can be in a situation. Like I remember with Heather, right? From Heather Thompson Gay from Salt Lake City.
Oh, Gavin. Yeah. Sorry.
From Salt Lake Heather City. She was doing a lot of things that were driving Arati bananas, because Arati often said she sees so much of herself in Heather. And Heather kept doing things that are ultimately going to hurt her. They're going to hurt her in the long run. And it was like, girl, you have got to stop. And, you know, you have these situations where you almost want better for them because you see so much of yourself in that person. We had the same thing happen. We were talking about Shaws of Sunset, where you have Gigi and her sister. And her sister is like, so Arthi was like, her sister's the fucking worst. And I was like, no, her sister's great. And she was like, no, she's not kind to Gigi at all. And we had this discussion where I'm the youngest in my family. Arthi's the oldest in her family.
Oh, wow.
It was like, I don't like Gigi because I could have been like Gigi, but I wasn't because I did all the right things, or I thought I did some of the right things, or I rehabbed myself because I was like a rebellious teen. And then I didn't do the things that she did, right? So your emotions or how you view that person's behavior on TV is often informed by how much of yourself is projecting. Like, and so I feel like it's fascinating. And that's why sometimes when there's things happening around the world or something that's happening in your real life, it can alter the way you view a conflict on reality TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it okay if we transition a little bit? Because you're bringing up something that I do want us to talk about, which is the fact that we have had very intense conversations in our DMs. And a portion of this recorded episode is actually going to go up as a separate Kiki on Patreon. And it is a really nuanced, complicated, intense conversation, but one of, you know, that's kind of one of my favorites to have here on AG. So that will go up on Patreon shortly, and I want to thank both of you for your insight in that conversation, and also to all of the AGs who understand, you know, that sometimes it's okay for us to feel a little uncomfortable now and again. And so we're gonna have a little convo about our feelings about politics, Clubhouse, and how it can be great, and really the world and the impact that social media has had on our thoughts and feels and so much more. So to any Patreon AGs, look for that bonus and really honestly nuanced and emotional episode featuring these amazing ladies and, you know, myself, up on Patreon soon. And I want to thank both of you for the vulnerability that you expressed and everything else. Can you tell us how to listen to your podcast and follow you on social and online?
Yeah, sure. We are at The Reality Is Pod everywhere, on Twitter, on Instagram. We're not on Facebook, okay? Because no. If you go on our Instagram and you click on the link in our bio, it'll take you to every single platform that you any platform that you listen to your podcast on, and where The Reality Is. Everywhere, iTunes, Spotify, whatever. And yeah, we hope you love it.
I love it.
Thank you, Sarah.
I mean, I loved this. This was your first. We laughed. We cried.
We did cry.
Oh, we did cry. Did, I mean, we did cry. We sobbed. We sobbed.
It was. I have tissues.
I have tissues like that I have to go throw away now.
Oh my God.
I have so much snot on it. But
I use my robe, and there we go. Just a real, real little feminine touch over here at AGHQ. Guys, if you're not in Andy Scrolls Patreon, what the fuck is wrong with you? Patreon.com/AndySkrulls. You get exclusive bonus episodes, invites to special events, and the opportunity to record with yours truly on a Patreon exclusive episode. Patreon.com/AndySkrulls. Are you subscribed to the pod? Probably not. Do that thing. Yeah, etc. And so on. And subscribe to Andy Scrolls. Rate the pod 5 stars on iTunes. Follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. Anything I'm missing? I feel like I covered the gamut. If you are a Team Danielle person, we do ride at dawn. Just kidding. I have heard from you, and I genuinely do respect your opinion for being Team Dead. I totally get it. I don't share it, but I understand. And look at how that works. Look at how we see each other. Hang in there, stay safe, stay sane, get vaccinated if you can, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.